Matthew chapter 27. When morning was come, all the chief priests and elders of the people took counsel against Jesus to put him to death. And when they had bound him, they led him away, and delivered him to Pontius Pilate the governor. Then Judas, which had betrayed him, when he saw that he was condemned, repented himself, and brought again the 30 pieces of silver to the chief priests and elders, saying, I have sinned in that I have betrayed the innocent blood. And they said, What is that to us? See thou to that. And he cast down the pieces of silver in the temple and departed, and went and hanged himself. And the chief priests took the silver pieces and said, It is not lawful for to put them into the treasury, because it is the price of blood. And they took counsel and bought with them the potter's field to bury strangers in. Wherefore that field was called the field of blood unto this day. Then was fulfilled that which was spoken by Jeremy the prophet, saying, And they took the 30 pieces of silver, the price of him that was valued, whom they of the children of Israel did value, and gave them for the potter's field, as the Lord appointed me. After having this counsel in the previous chapter among themselves, they're seeking to find a means to put Christ to death. And they bring him to the governor, the Roman governor, Pontius Pilate. And then we have the incident with Judas returning, feeling the guilt of what he had done. He knew that Jesus was an innocent man. A lot of times people presume a lot about Judas. They say, well, he thought he was forcing Jesus' hand. That's a popular one. They think where Judas thought he was trying to force Jesus to show himself to be the Christ. And the disappointment and so on and so forth. Well, the scripture says he was a thief. Could have been greed. It could have been anything. See, it doesn't have to be, like, there's no more justifiable reason than the other. There's no justification at all. Sin never has a justification. We give our reasons, we give our explanations, but they are not justifications. And there's really no point to it. It's not just about making a bad decision. It's about our hearts being perverse. And I can't presume more upon this than what is said. And I don't counsel anyone to do so, because it really doesn't matter to us. He went and hanged himself. You know, it's funny. I used to belong to a church, and I refer often to the Shepherd's Chapel, which was my former, my original teaching. I don't refer to the church I belonged to recently, but I mean in former days. And they loved to dispute the fact of Judas hanging himself. It was always, the teacher, Arnold Murray, always would insinuate that the Jews had something to do with it. That they somehow had him snuffed out. You know, that there was some sort of something under between the lines here that we should understand that Judas had a little help when he hung himself. And I think that's ridiculous. Because to say that, then you have to say, well, the scriptures here are deceptive. That the apostles were more ignorant than you and I. You and I know something that they didn't know. They thought Judas hung himself. Well, we know better than that. We know what those dirty Jews did. And I really think it's offensive. There's no point to it either. Because, what, you're trying to justify Judas after the fact? I don't seek to condemn him either. His own works will condemn him. Or justify him. His judgment is sealed with God. It is given unto men once to die. And after that, the judgment. But Jesus already said a few things about his judgment. He says, Woe to him by whom it is betrayed. It would be better for that man if he had not been born. So to me that says, judgment not good. He betrayed Christ. So his judgment is not going to be to his liking. To just put it very simply. There's a mention of this prophecy spoken by Jeremy the prophet. And because it was spoken, it is useless to go looking it up. Because this is a spoken prophecy. This is something that is delivered by oral tradition, something that Jeremiah said. Oral traditions have kind of fallen by the wayside, but at one time they were very strong and very accurate because it was considered important to transmit the oral tradition accurately. I remember when I was part of the Cub Scouts, they did this thing about tall tales. And really, I found it completely offensive. Because what they would do is they have the kids pass a message one to the other, and then from that one to the next one, down a line. to show how the word gets perverted as it's passed from ear to ear. They'd have them whisper in each other's ears something, and then at the end, they'd see what it came out to say. And the idea was that this is how tall tales start. And they talk about Paul Bunyan and so on and so forth, but Paul Bunyan was an actual book. I mean, it was a pure piece of fiction someone wrote. It wasn't something that was passed down by oral tradition and became sort of exaggerated over time. It was something that was intentionally exaggerated. And it's a bit offensive because oral traditions in many cultures are very strong yet, and they codify something. You know, it's like the unspoken law. You know, we don't have to write down certain facets of culture because they're unwritten rules. And no one questions, is this the unwritten rule or not? And also, I want to distinguish oral traditions from the traditions of men, meaning traditions that arise because of men's desires or because of the way men want to hear things or because of whatever reason. But they're still very strong. I don't mean to justify all forms of tradition. What I'm saying is, though, that these traditions can be very powerful. And they don't have to be written down to be forceful or memorable. So an oral tradition about a prophetic saying can be as accurate as any. And hey, if you're a believer, you know the writer of the gospel, Matthew, is aware of this, being a Jew. So he's aware of the saying of Jeremiah, Jeremy being Jeremiah. This potter's field and the 30 pieces of silver is a part of a prophetic tradition going back to Jeremiah. But in Zechariah, there's also a reference to it. And he says, "And I took my staff, even beauty, and cut it asunder, that I might break my covenant which I have made with all the people. And it was broken in that day. And so the poor of the flock that waited upon me knew that it was the word of the Lord. And I said unto them, if you think good, give me my price, and if not, forbear. So they weighed for my price 30 pieces of silver. And the Lord said unto me, cast it unto the potter, a goodly price that I was prized at of them. And I took the 30 pieces of silver and cast them to the potter in the house of the Lord." In that prophetic utterance, you see a lot of shades of the breaking of Christ, the breaking of the old covenant and the making of the new. And you also see the poor of the flock hearing the gospel, that those who were rich in the things of God, or appeared to be, meaning the chief elders, the priests, the scribes, the Pharisees, they did not partake of Christ's